Well, it's time for Making Sausage on the Thursday morning show. We take a look at the messy business of sausage making and politics. Our DFL commentator, Colleen Nardone, is here. Thanks for being in today, Colleen.
Thanks for having me, Heidi.
Well, and we thought this week would be a great time
I'm so excited you're asking this question. You're going to ask Brianna. I don't know what the hell's going on down there with this veto and all that stuff. It's like it's hard to concentrate on what it is and what it means.
So we thought it would be a great time to check in with Brianna Birschbach from MinnPost to kind of understand what's going on with Governor Dayton's veto of the legislative budget. It went to the Minnesota Supreme Court. Thanks for being here today, Brianna. Good to have you here. You're going to shape us up now.
Yeah, hopefully. I think I'm kind of in the same position as you, but everybody is a little bit, even the governor. So,
well, let's kind of just set the stage first. What happened at the end of the session that has led to what is going on right now?
Sure. Well, we had a divided government, so I think everybody knew it was going to be a little bit messy. Governor Mark Dayton is entering his final year in office as a Democrat. We have a Republican-controlled legislature. And they took until the very last minute and over the last minute to get a budget deal. They pushed it until the final hour of regular session to get a handshake deal. And then they went into a special session that took several days. It was sort of felt like it was never going to end. And at the end of it, the legislature passed a $650 million tax bill, several budget items, and went home because that was sort of part of their agreement. They go home after they pass the bills. Dayton gets them, doesn't like everything in the bills, and we don't really know what they talked about behind closed doors, so we don't know what kind of agreements they did or didn't have about any of these proposals. Dayton said he didn't like many provisions in the tax bill and many in the budget bills, so he vetoed the funding for the legislature specifically to compel them to come back to the negotiating table to talk about these provisions. Now, he could have also vetoed these individual budget bills or tax bills he didn't like, but he didn't for several reasons. One was he didn't want to have another government shutdown. He had one the first year he was in office. And he also, there was a provision in the state government finance bill that sort of forced his hand to sign the tax bill that wouldn't have funded the Department of Revenue if the tax bill hadn't been signed. So he felt sort of tricked into signing that bill. So he used this maneuver, not funding the legislature. That's the first time it's ever been done. The legislature said, no, we're not coming back to the negotiating table at the time. This was the end of May. And they sued him instead, saying it was unconstitutional to take away the funding of another separate branch of government, which is kind of where we're at today. It's climbed up in the courts. First, it went to Ramsey County Court, and now it was appealed recently to the Supreme Court.
So, Brianna, was he tricked into signing that bill?
You know, that's what he said. He said he didn't know about the provision, and other Republican legislative leaders would say, hey, you have hundreds of staffers. This is in several iterations of the bill. I'll read these bills as well, and it was late in the game. I didn't see it. I didn't see it until after the fact. I think a lot of people didn't know about it until after the bills were sort of on his desk. So he says he didn't know about it, and he felt like it was a stealth maneuver that forced his hand. So he thought he would do this pretty unprecedented thing, which was defund. I don't think they like that term, but essentially defund the House and the Senate.
Colleen, have you ever seen anything, you know, you're a longtime DFLer, you ever seen anything like this happen before?
Never. I was thinking about that driving here, that I started doing this and observing the legislature back in the late 70s, and I have never seen anything even close to being like this before. I don't know if Brianna has the same perception I do, because she's right down there where I'm getting it, you know, from watching TV and things, but I'm getting the sense that there are fewer hearings and less public input than what there used to be on some of these bills, that a lot of it comes up at that last minute between, you know, what are we going to put in there because we have to adjourn day after tomorrow type of thing. Is that just am I missing something, or is that what's going on?
You know, I've covered the legislature for about seven sessions now, and it does seem like we keep pushing the deadlines back further and further. And you know, it's not just me. Other people who've been here a long time say, you know, there's always a lot of work that's done at the end, but they've really started pushing almost all of it to the end. So there was little stuff done all session, and Republicans would say, you know, we had these big bills out early and we passed them early. But when it comes down to it, the entirety of the contents of these big budget bills are really up for debate in the final hours of a regular session and then in the middle of the night during a special session. And if everything's open for debate, you really can't claim that because you pushed a bill early in session that everybody should know what's in it. I didn't know what was in any of these budget bills as they were being discussed behind closed doors. Anything was fair game to be inserted or taken out. So, I think the amount, the volume of things that have been pushed to the very end is really getting worse over time and really brought up this discussion about omnibus bills, which is a terrible word that basically means everything in one. So it's a giant bill that includes all sorts of budget provisions and sometimes policy provisions. And they're getting, I think, larger or becoming the more used means of creating bills, and they're all being created at the end. So I don't think you're wrong. I think that is happening more.
We're talking with Brianna Birschbach. She covers the legislature for MinnPost. So let's get back to Governor Dayton and the Minnesota Supreme Court. What did they come out with on, was it Friday?
Yep, that last Friday. So the Ramsey County District Court ruled Dayton's veto was unconstitutional, which I think a lot of people expected, actually. He said it was null and void. The legislature had funding. Dayton said, no, I'm going to appeal this to the Minnesota Supreme Court. And Republicans expected that as well. They said, yes, let's take this to the highest court. Let's be done with this so we know once and for all if this is a proper move in state government. The Minnesota Supreme Court had oral arguments at the end of August, and then on Friday they came out with a very short ruling that was very open-ended, but it did declare Dayton's veto constitutional. It didn't necessarily reverse the lower court ruling. It said it was constitutional, and it left the case open, which is kind of strange. It said, we're leaving this open. We want you guys to find a mediator, and this is your job. You need to figure it out amongst yourselves. There's still time because the legislature is temporarily funded through a previous court order until October 1st. So they have funding until the 1st of next month, and then they have some reserve funds. So they're saying Dayton's veto was constitutional. The Constitution gives the governor the power to line item veto, but it could head into unconstitutional territory if the citizens of Minnesota are deprived of a legislative branch. Now, that could happen down the road if they don't have funding. So they said, work this out amongst yourselves, try to get a mediator, which they did this week. Former Judge Rick Solem is going to be mediating this dispute between them over the next month or so. And if you can't figure it out, you're going to have to come back with new oral arguments and we'll figure it out for you, I think, was kind of the message of the court. So that's where we're at now. They're all entering into it in good faith, but we've seen them enter into a lot of things with good faith and not come out with a good result. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this mediator changes the dynamic.
When I think of a mediator being appointed by the court, the only thing that ever comes into my mind is, you know, in a divorce proceeding. And I'm wondering if the Supreme Court has ever done anything like this before to say, get a mediator and work it out and come back to us.
You know, yeah, that's really a good question. I thought it was interesting that they appointed a mediator because in other court cases, when it came to shutdowns and all of that, a lot of judges thought out loud, is it even appropriate for the court to appoint a mediator? I mean, the court is in kind of a pickle here. I mean, they don't want to appoint appropriate funding because they say that's not our constitutional right. We're not the legislative branch. We're not supposed to appropriate funding or sign bills or do any of that. But is it appropriate for them to assign a mediator? I haven't ever seen anything like this in my short time, but no one has really pointed to any examples in the recent past where a mediator has had to come in, at least not from the courts, to try and help solve or facilitate a solving of the problem between the governor and the legislature.
What do the opponents of what Governor Dayton did to line item veto the budget for the legislature, what do they say, and then the Supreme Court not saying it was unconstitutional, what do they think that could mean long-term for the state?
Sure. Yeah, you know, I think the legislature had a very short statement about this, and they kind of pointed to a different part of the ruling. You know, everyone will read what they want to read out of it. They pointed to the fact that the Supreme Court said his veto was constitutional, but, and then they said, you know, this doesn't end the matter. And so that's kind of what the legislature pointed to. But you talk to a lot of experts, political scientists and attorneys who watch politics as well, and they're worried about it. They certainly think this is something a governor has never done before in the history of the state, and many governors could do to follow. I think Tim Pawlenty's former spokesman had said on a show, he was quoted somewhere saying, you know, if we had known this was something we could do, we probably would have done it all the time. You know, it's a good way to force people back into negotiations when you are stuck on something or they've gone home, the legislature's adjourned. So it's really interesting. I don't know if future governors will do it, but they now have precedent for it, and they now know that they can. Some have suggested and gone as far to say that if the governor can veto the budget for the legislature, couldn't a future governor veto the budget for the judicial branch if they don't like a ruling that the judicial branch gave? You know, everyone said, oh, that would be unsavory. No governor would ever do that. But, you know, politics is nuttier every year. So, I think some people are seeing that as a real possibility in future sessions.
Well, in some ways, didn't the legislature open the door to messing in other branches of government when they redefined the state auditor's job? I think not this session, but was it one session back?
Yeah, 2015. They did, and that is also going through a court case and is being appealed up to the Supreme Court as well. So that'll be interesting. I mean, essentially what they did is they shifted some of the power of the office and allowed private firms to do auditing of local governments, which Otto is now arguing in court really weakens the core constitutional functions of her office. Now, lower court didn't agree with her, but she's appealing to the Supreme Court, which we've seen can have quite different opinions than the lower court. So it'll be interesting to see where that one goes as well. Also, some argued that they messed with the authority of the executive branch when they forced Dayton to sign the tax bill by putting a provision in the state government bill, excuse me, that he had to sign it, otherwise the Department of Revenue wouldn't have been funded. Some said they were trying to step in and control his power of signing or vetoing bills, which is explicitly the governor's in the Constitution. The governor never really took that to court. He could have brought that as a separate case, so we aren't really going to know the sort of parameters of that argument, unfortunately.
Well, we know how the Republicans in the legislature have responded to this. How about DFLers?
Yeah, DFLers have been kind of quiet, especially legislators. I think it's an awkward position for them because these are their paychecks, too. And if a Republican governor had done it, I don't think any of them would have hesitated saying that it was unconstitutional. But for the most part, since we're not in session right now, people have stayed pretty quiet, and leaders in the Democratic Party have defended what Dayton's done. I think, you know, pointing to some of the things Republicans did, have mostly defended it. So it's kind of interesting. But I think it would have been very interesting to see if they would have had the votes to override Dayton's veto of the legislative budget if they had still been in special session and he had done it while they were in special session. Could they have overridden his veto, which would require more votes in both chambers, a three-fifths majorities? Would they have been able to get Democrats to come on and help them out? I don't know the answer to that, but it would have been an interesting test that unfortunately we never really got. We could come back into a special session, though. That's totally a possibility of this mediator. If they come to an agreement, Dayton could call another special session. They could repass legislative funding, and they could deal with other issues that they agreed to as part of this mediation. So maybe we'll have a chance to see some votes on this issue yet this year.
All right. Anything we missed, or what do you got cooking up right now, Brianna? What are you looking into for your next?
You know, I'm digging a little more into this Amazon story. I don't know if you guys are following. Amazon is doing a nationwide hunt for its next second North American headquarters, and Minnesota's sort of part of it, and looking a little bit deeper into Dayton's history and legacy as governor, doing a lot of taxpayer incentives and for businesses or big state projects. It's been a big part of what he's done as governor, and part of kind of his history. He used to be a jobs commissioner back in Perpich's administration. So I'm going to dig a little bit more into that, and it should be an interesting story.
I'm looking forward to that because I think we have we're finding among, as I hear from regular citizens, that they're getting really turned off by this kind of thing, so much money mm-hmm. going to corporations.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what you'll find out when you're able to dig into it in a broader sense than what.
Yeah. I think Dayton's heard both sides. You know, corporate welfare is certainly never far when, you know, the state's putting in money for the wilts to build a Viking stadium. And yeah, I think he's more sensitive to that now, and also to other companies in the state with his Amazon bid. So it's a little bit different than some of the other bids he's dealt with, but certainly part of a track record he's had as governor. But yeah, I look forward to writing it, and maybe we could chat about that one too.
Sounds great. That's Brianna Birschbach from MinnPost. You can read her writing at MinnPost.com. MinnPost is a member-supported journalism organization, much like Northern Community Radio. You can check out membership at their site as well. Brianna, thanks for talking with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. This is Making Sausage Clean. Good to talk to you, and we're hoping to get more of our... We got a couple of feelers out there for more governor candidates coming in, because there's so many out there. We've done quite a few, but we'd love to hear from those candidates as well. So
I'd like to get them all in before precinct caucus time.
That's right. And if you've missed those conversations, don't forget you can find them easily on our website. Just look for search on the website, put in governor, and it will pop up, and you'll be able to hear those conversations. It's Colleen Nardone, our longtime commentator for Northern Community Radio's Making Sausage.
Happy day.